Hello, and welcome to Bostonian Rap. My name is Rachel Meiselman. You will be listening to me on WBCALP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station. But first, we're going to go to a quick disclaimer, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to tear into a few people. No, we're going to unpack the issues of the day.
The following commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio at bnnmedia.org.
Hello, and welcome back to Bostonian Rap. Again, my name is Rachel Meiselman, and you are listening to me on WBCALP 102.9 FM Boston. So I'm back with a new show, and it feels very, very nice to be back. And as always, there's a lot really to go through. And so I'll do what I always do, and I'll start at the beginning. So, those who know me, who actually know me, I have to say that those who are involved with politics, they really believe that they know you, right? They ask around, they may even dig around. I mean, it is politics after all, right? And so they think that they somehow know you. They somehow think that they know you. And the truth is they really don't. Those who actually know me know that I believe very much in the meritocratic ideal. And, you know, there might be some people, some of you listening and saying, well, I mean, you've been pretty open about that. You've been pretty vocal, public about that. Of course you believe in the meritocratic ideal. Of course we know this. But I don't think people truly understand to what extent. I think that if you want something, you earn it. And that really kind of extends over into every aspect of my life. It's not just professional. It's also personal. And I look at what's going on. And I think that the biggest enemy of the meritocratic ideal, which really, I would have to say, is the best, it's the best deal going for everyone. The biggest enemy of the meritocratic ideal, I would say, nepotism, cronyism, because it really, it does so much to diminish the achievements of some, the hard work of some, and prioritizes connections and a willingness to bob and weave over achievements and those achievements and the hard work. And that's really a bitter pill for me to swallow. I don't think that I have to, or I should have to, make nice with someone in order to get a job that I'm qualified for, to be considered for a board position, to be accepted in an organization as a volunteer where there are many people who want to volunteer. If I have the profile, if I have the experience, why do I need to flatter you? Why do I need to cozy up to you? Why do I need to ingratiate myself with you? I don't have to do that. Now, don't get me wrong. That doesn't mean I want to go about my daily business being antagonistic. I mean, I certainly don't want to be that, but I don't see the need to, I guess, tend to someone's ego in order to get ahead when I've worked really hard and I have the bona fides, the necessary bona fides. And I think that really should be the mindset of everyone. Now, of course, that's just my opinion. And of course, and at the end of the day, probably the best I'm going to be able to do is argue that that's good for me. That's the best way of operating for me. But I don't see how other people could not agree at least somewhat with the idea of you want something, you have to work for it. The only people who are going to disagree with that outright and altogether are people who are lazy and people who expect to get something by engaging in a game of quid pro quo. And I'm personally not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. And I always like to say that before I started talking about politics, or as I was talking about politics, I, at the same time, was commenting on social phenomena, because you can't divorce the two. You can't. And whatever is going on socially is eventually, of course, going to make itself, it's going to make its way into the political arena. And so we have a climate where people just, it's not what you know. It's not even who knows you. Let me hit the rewind button. It's not what you know. It's not who you know. There we go. It's who knows you. And the first time I heard that, I thought that that was fairly profound. And I had a bit of an epiphany, because that made perfect sense to me. I didn't have, the person who said this or articulated this did not have to explain it to me. I understood right away. Because you can know all the people in the world. It doesn't really matter. We're in a climate, it's a day and age where people are going to put you in a position, even if you don't deserve to be there, even if you have no qualifications or no business there, they're going to put you there if it's in their interest. If you've done something for them, and you could do more for them should you have that position. And it's sad, because when you have a proliferation of such practices, it's not long before it really starts to impact people quite adversely. When you have a lot of people in positions and they don't know what they're doing, but they have the authority to make decisions, think about it. That's actually kind of scary. And so let me, with that in mind, I want to talk about a particular position that has opened up. So Boston City Councilor Erin Murphy has announced that she is going to run, or she is running for the Supreme Judicial, the clerk for the Supreme, for the Suffolk Supreme Judicial Court. There we go. And it's a bit of a mouthful. And it, while there is certainly an administrative aspect of it, one would certainly need to know, have an intimate knowledge of how courts work, how the legal profession works, because in this capacity, one is overseeing, you know, the swearing in of attorneys. If there's a disciplinary measure that needs to be enacted, then, you know, this particular position, you know, the individual who holds this office is brought in. And I mean, Erin Murphy, she spent a while in a classroom. She was an elementary school teacher. And she has been on the Boston City Council now since what? I'm trying to think. It's been, I think it's been since 2021. And I'm just, I'm kind of, I'm astounded. She did serve out, when she just got sworn in, on January 1st of 2024, it was her third swearing in. That's what she said. And it's kind of misleading to say that because it was, in fact, her third swearing in. But the first time that she was sworn in, she basically finished out about a month of Michelle Wu's term. And then she was sworn in for her first full term in, what was it? Yeah, 2021. But I just, I don't really know what to say. I'm just at a loss of words because I myself have legal training, and I just simply would not have the nerve to run for this if I had her background. And with my background, I wouldn't run because it wouldn't be a good fit. There are parts, there are aspects of the job, and I don't think I have a sufficient amount of experience. And in one or two regards, I don't have experience. So it just wouldn't make sense at this juncture. Perhaps later on, you know, if I were interested and I thought that I, you know, at a subsequent point in time had all the necessary pieces in place, I had all the necessary experience, then sure, you know, I might explore the idea of running. But people need to understand, you know, I'm going to jump back to this idea of, like, you know, people who think that they know me. I'm not going to run for something. I'm not going to run for anything and everything. I'm only going to run for something that I think that I'm qualified to do, that I have the necessary experience, that I can walk into the job and just get going. And the other piece of that puzzle is that I think that I believe that I would be able to do a better job than the incumbent or the person who had been in the position. You know, otherwise I'm not going to run. Because it's all about earning something, and it's all about having the experience, and it's all about knowing what you're doing. We can't have people making important decisions and learning on the job. And so Erin Murphy, I'm like, you know, I'm going to her website here. Why I'm running? Why? Yeah, I know why you're running. You want to goose your pension. Let's see. Am I having internet problems here? All right, I'll try to get that in a little bit, but for some reason it's not my internet's not cooperating with me. But, you know, I'm going to read a little bit why she's running. And it's just, you're running because, you know, if I were to speak to her directly, I'd say you're running because these positions that, you know, have this administrative aspect, some of them have a bigger administrative aspect than others. Once people are elected to these positions, they don't really interact with the public much anymore. It's not the same as being a city councilor, which she currently is. It's not the same as being, a state senator or state representative. You're in the background. You're in the background. But the problem with that is that there's no scrutiny. And so that, of course, lends itself to people getting elected into these positions and staying there for as long as they want the position. And, you know, some people might be saying, well, isn't that true in general in Boston? Because, you know, the lay of the land is overwhelmingly Democrat. I would respond that, you know, that's to a large extent true. But again, you know, if you're a state rep, you're a city councilor, you're a state senator, you're a lot more visible to the public than, say, register of deeds, register of probate, or, you know, the position that Aaron's running for. And we're in a day and age where we need to know what our elected officials are doing. We do. And it's not just a matter of, well, because suddenly accountability is cool. suddenly transparency is the thing. It's not new wanting to know what our elected officials are doing. But I would say that it's now reached a critical point. And I think that this kind of new mindset, it was ushered in with the pandemic. And it's this idea that people felt helpless. They felt powerless. And they felt very much at the mercy of our elected officials, some of whom, quite frankly, just didn't even really seem to be in a rush to make decisions. And those decisions, though, were the difference between, I don't want to say life and death, but it was, excuse me, there were some situations very acute. People were in some very delicate, even perilous situations, and they needed immediate help, and they weren't getting it. They couldn't get people on the phone when they called up their elected officials. They couldn't get satisfying answers. They couldn't get consistent answers. And so I think that one of the residuals of the pandemic, if you will, is that people want to know what their elected officials are doing. And more than ever, they really want to be a part of the process. They want, at the very least, they want elected officials to know that they're watching. And so I won't, you know, say that, well, the best demonstration of that is, or the most obvious demonstration of that is, the, you know, the protests, because some of these protests, particularly the ones that took place in front of Michelle Wu's home, the anti-vaxxers, for them, it was just building name recognition. It was, you know, going after clout. It was to set, so several of them, you know, following the protests, ran for office. I don't know if that's the best example, but I would say that there's a greater desire to learn how things work and to get answers. And I think that before, people I'm not saying they were walking around in a fog per se. I think it was more down to they just weren't paying so much attention because, you know, life and family and, you know, job or this or that. So their hands were full, right? But now people are like, well, wait a minute, what you're doing, it could really make a huge difference in how I live. So I really need to keep my eye on you and know what you're doing. So, okay, here we go. So I am on Erin's website and, you know, she's here talking about, so it's a mouthful, you know, I want to get this right. So she's running to be the clerk of the Supreme Judicial Court, and it's of Suffolk County. And she says, why I'm qualified to serve. So she starts off in her first paragraph, and she talks about Maura Doyle, who had held the position for 30 years. So she decided not to run for re-election. And, you know, so Erin starts off, you know, she references Maura Doyle. She, of course, says, well, I'm honored to count her as a longtime friend as well. And as the first woman elected to countywide office in Suffolk, she has been a trailblazer, and I'm grateful to her for her service. Okay, la, 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 la. Then she goes on, you know, the typical, and after a strong urging of friends and supporters and colleagues across the county, I'm enthusiastically seeking the SJC clerkship. And so she goes on to say that at this perilous moment for our democracy, the people of Boston, Chelsea, Revere, and Winthrop deserve an elected representative who will take an unwavering approach to ensuring that the court system's caseload is managed responsibly, that we uphold matters relating to the bar admission, and that the practice of law in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts effectively, and that the court handle interactions with state boards and agencies in a manner that effectuates the competent, productive operation of the people's government. And, I mean, it just sounds like she basically just looked up the description and just threw it in her explanation as to why she's qualified, she's not, for this position. And, you know, she just prefaces it with, well, at this perilous time, at this critical moment. Then she goes on to say, as an active Boston City Councilor at large, I battle efforts to compromise Bostonians. Doesn't really read well. I battle efforts to compromise Bostonians' constitutional voting rights, and I will bring the same uncompromising stance to ensure equity under the law. The residents of Suffolk County deserve someone in that office who is committed first to serving them and advocating for their rights before the law. I'm sorry, but this woman is so unbelievably, colossally unqualified for this position that it's, she should be ashamed of herself for running. If she sat down and had a moment of clarity, what I'm saying is that, you know, if there were, you know, even a modicum of shame that she had, you know, she would just, you know, she would hang her head and her face would turn brick red. it's just, what we've gotten used to, particularly, nowhere is this more pervasive, and no more in no place is it more in your face than in the political arena, where we have situations where people stand up for positions, they run for them, and they're just placed there, and they learn on the job, and I find that insulting. Erin Murphy did not fight for the rights of Bostonians' constitutional voting rights. You know, she's referring there to when the city was being, you know, reimagined. That's not really the right word. You know, after the census, there was redistricting, And there were objections to, you know, District 3, what that was going to look like, just, you know, District 4. And what some of the objections, of course, were, some of you will remember, is that there were efforts to make maybe one area less white, maybe make another area, you know, put more minorities in there. It's, or, you know, that, you know, one area is too white, make it, you know, put more minorities in there, you know, another area, kind of fiddle with that. The idea was to kind of do some social engineering to bring about, some argued, equity. I mean, it doesn't always make sense to me. But, you know, that word equity is bandied about. So that was, I mean, put in the most, just put in complete layman terms, on the most basic level, it was the idea that, well, we have to kind of diversify things, make it more equitable. You know, one area is a little too white. You know, we need to have more minorities here. We need to, and more people of color. And to my knowledge, she didn't do anything other than maybe speak to a few newspapers, maybe one or two newspapers. She submitted an affidavit, and I'm pretty sure that, you know, this wasn't her speaking. Like, I think she agreed with it. I have no doubt that she agreed with what she submitted, but it wasn't like she, you know, sat down and just wrote and said, okay, yeah, this is how I want it to go, and here you go. She submitted an affidavit. She did an interview with maybe the Boston Herald. She might have done a few more interviews. I have to think back. But I mean, to take that and then turn that into, because it's related to voting rights and because that's related to the law, to take that and turn around and say that she's got the qualifications to run for the position that was held by Maura Doyle, who is a licensed attorney. I mean, that's incredible. So because you submitted an affidavit regarding the redistricting and you gave some interviews, you're qualified to be the clerk of the Supreme Judicial Court for Suffolk County? Really? I mean, I don't even understand that. I don't even understand that. And it's just really, it's tremendously insulting. And what she has done is she has kind of done a mashup. If you look at this website, she hasn't really, there doesn't seem to be an actual website for this position. She seems to have done like kind of like an amalgam of her time on the city council, her endorsements for that position, and we're going to get to that in a sec, and the why she's running and why she's qualified to be the Supreme Judicial Court, Supreme Judicial Court clerk of Suffolk County. I mean, I'm at a loss. I'm truly at a loss because you can't have someone who's overseeing the legal profession who doesn't have any legal background, who has no legal training, who doesn't have a law degree. I mean, it's absolutely outrageous. And then there's another aspect of it where she would be required, or, you know, should she win, or anyone who has this position would be required to manage staff. And it's like, what kind of managerial experience do you have? It's just so profoundly offensive. And what she did this past weekend, so today we are, what are we, April 3rd? So over the weekend, and no, it wasn't an April Fool's joke, she rolled out all these endorsements. But as it turned out, there were only a few of those claimed endorsements that were actually endorsements, because most of them were actually endorsements that she had received from labor unions for her run last year as a city councilor. Now, obviously, if you get an endorsement in one race, that doesn't carry over into another race, and everyone knows that. And she tried to muddy the waters and was kind of seemingly hoping people wouldn't understand. And it's like, how stupid do you think people are? And there were some organizations that she claimed had endorsed her, yet these organizations, they're prohibited from giving endorsements to a political candidate. So it was really, I think that when you have situations, speaking more generally, when you have situations where people are getting positions because of their connections, because of acquaintances, because of friendships, because of family, you know, maybe even, you know, family connections, that goes a long way into eroding public trust. It really, really, truly does. And, you know, it rubs people up the wrong way. But when you have people who are truly unqualified for the position, that really outright offends people. And I think that, I have to say, I really think that Erin Murphy is underestimating how people feel right now about their elected officials. People are not feeling very favorably toward their elected officials. And to engage in behavior like this, to run for a position that you're not qualified for in any way, shape, or form, after you just got elected to another position, and to claim endorsements that, to roll out a lot of endorsements, most of which you didn't actually get, I just don't know where her campaign can go from here. And so there is a woman who is running against her, running for the same position, and her name is Allison Cartwright. And it's like night and day. You know, Allison Cartwright has been, you know, working as an attorney for, oh my goodness, for 30 years. She currently manages about 75 attorneys. She has an intimate knowledge of the court system. And it's just, I just don't get it. And I talk about this not because, it's not about personal feelings about one person or another person, although I'm not a big fan of Erin Murphy, that, you know, I'm pretty upfront about that, but it's because it's so, for me, it's so emblematic are paradigmatic of what's wrong right now. This idea that people think that, well, if I, you know, if I want to run for something, you know, I'm going to do it. Or if I want something, I'm just going to go for it. And qualifications and hard work or bona fides, be darned. I really don't know what to say. So you have, like I said, you have Alison Cartwright. You know, there's, she has an abundant amount of experience. I mean, 30 years of experience and as a lawyer, as I said, and I just, I wouldn't have the guts. I wouldn't have the chutzpah to run for something. If I had only some of the qualifications, never mind none of them. But, you know, this story that I've been relating, this very concrete example, it's less about Erin Murphy and it's more about the environment, the climate that we're living in. And I think that we need to return to a society and an environment. We need to work to bring about or usher in a climate where if people have a position, it's because they know what they're doing. It's because they've earned it. It's because they have the qualifications. Let me give you another concrete example. I remember I went to the New Balance store. It's a New Balance factory. It's in the Brighton neighborhood of Boston. And I remember asking one of the salespeople there a question about the shoe, one of the shoes. And I received a comprehensive answer. The young woman answered me confidently, knowledgeably. And I was very happy. I was very happy. And that kind of stayed with me because whatever you do, I don't care what it, I bagging groceries, not that I'm not, you know, I'm not saying, I'm not throwing that out there as, well, even if you bag groceries, no, if you bag groceries, I don't care if you're bagging groceries, you're mopping floors, you're running a company with 500 employees, you're running a company with 5 employees, you started up an online business, you know, blue collar work, white collar work, you're in the gig economy, you're doing the 9-to-5 thing, you work overnight, you work in the mornings, you work in the afternoons. I don't care what you do, when you do it. Only thing I care about is you're doing something and you know what you're doing. That's very, very, very important to me. And I think that whatever level of society, that kind of mindset, that needs to carry like everywhere. And I did say at the beginning of this show that the meritocratic ideal is something that is in every ass. It has marked every aspect of my life. We need people everywhere who know what they're doing. I mean, I'm not saying that everyone always has to have the answers everywhere you turn, but we have to have a society where people have knowledge. We have to have a society where experience, relevant experience, is valued. We have to have a society where people are making decisions, important decisions, and they know the issues so that when they make the decisions can be informed ones, so that the people who are going to be impacted by those decisions are not going to suffer. And it's kind of sad that I have to say all this, but I do. I do have to say all this because we're living in a society where it's just, we're devaluing education. We're throwing water on experience. We're placing personal connections over people that worked to get to a point where they could apply for a particular job. And it's offensive. It's offensive. We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to further unpack this topic with a few more examples.
If you are struggling to afford internet service for your household, there's a new government program that may be able to help. It's called the Affordable Connectivity Program, and it provides up to a $30 monthly discount to qualifying households. Find more information about the program, including if you qualify and how to enroll, at fcc.gov/ACP or call toll-free at 877-384-2575. That's 877-384-2575.
Hey, Dad, how do airplanes fly? What's in this box? Is this tree good for climbing? How are babies made? What does this thing do?
Kids are curious about everything, including guns. Talking to them about gun safety in your home is a good first step, but you can do more. Always keep your guns locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. That's nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by nFamily Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
Hey, everything okay?
Yes, I'm fine.
Honey. Hey, I'm here for you. Tell me about school today.
When kids can't find the right words, music can help them sound it out. Talk to the kids in your life about their emotional well-being. Find tools and resources at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Hello, and welcome back to Bostonian Rap. Again, you've been listening to me, Rachel Meiselman, on WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston. So I've been talking about the meritocratic ideal, and it's just so important to me. And I think that really it's the basis of success for the maximum amount of citizens, residents in any society. Now, let me just throw this out there, too. I understand that the playing field isn't always level, and so we want to make sure that the playing field is as level as possible. We want to make sure that there's an abundance of good schools. We want to make sure that there, I like to call it a galaxy, a constellation of schools that will accommodate the different types of learners that we have so that all of our youth can get a solid educational foundation. And I want there to be a bevy of schools and learning opportunities for our adults as well, because I think that regardless of what we do, it's important that we continue to learn and we continue to build our knowledge base, our mental database, if you will. And I think that, yes, it's important to acknowledge that level, that playing field isn't always level. But as I said, you know, I think that we can go a long ways into tackling what can be an inequality by making sure that we all have access to a quality education, regardless of neighborhood, municipality, or age. So I, you know, I've been talking for most of the show about, you know, Erin Murphy and her bid, you know, to be the clerk of the Supreme Judicial Court for Suffolk County, because I just, I'm flabbergasted that she would actually have the nerve to run. So yeah, she got elected in 2021. She served out like about a month of Michelle Wu's term because Alejandra St. Guillen had finished fifth in 2019 and Erin Murphy finished sixth. And so because Michelle won her bid for mayor, she was sworn in November. And then Alejandra St. Guillen did not get the number of votes that she needed to be able to serve out Michelle Wu's term. And so then there was a bit of a delay, and then she passed on serving out Michelle Wu's term. The next person, Erin Murphy, she had finished sixth in 2019. So she served out Michelle's term, and then she was sworn into her first full term in 2022. And honestly, I don't even know what to say. She's a junior politician on top of everything else. So if you compare it to Alison Cartwright, as I said, she is, you know, she's been an attorney for 30 years. Her current position, she's a managing director with the Committee for Public Counsel Services. A lot of her experience has revolved around litigation, jury trial. She had a general law practice in Jamaica Plain. And while she had her own practice, she was also serving as a supervising attorney with Suffolk Lawyers for Justice, Inc. And she also held the position of Assistant Corporation Counsel for the City of Boston. I mean, I'm sorry. And, you know, she's held other appointments, and there have been some board memberships. And I just, look, I think that Erin, her time in a classroom, that's important work. I never said it wasn't, but she is a junior politician. And what she was, is she was an elementary school teacher. So that, coupled with she just got sworn in for her second full term. How is that? It's one thing if you have a race where you have one candidate who is more qualified, who has a more extensive work history than the other. But this is, it's just, there's no comparison. And to actually draw a comparison would be insulting to Alison Cartwright. And so it's just, there are people on the left and right who are just kind of like taken aback and they're offended. And it's ultimately less about Erin Murphy and it's more about the climate in which something like this is allowed to happen. And, you know, we have other instances where, you know, nepotism, cronyism, that's the consideration. So just so people don't think I'm picking on one person or another, like I said, it's more, I do think Erin Murphy in doing this comes across This pantser is tremendously entitled. It's not a good look at all. But again, for me, I want the takeaway from tonight's show to be more about, well, what kind of society are we living in now? Why are we devaluing education? And especially in a state like Massachusetts, my goodness gracious, Boston, I say this all the time, it's an education-based economy. And Massachusetts is home to so many colleges and in vocational schools, and there's so many different opportunities to embark on careers of a wide variety. And so for us to allow for cronyism, nepotism to rule the day, it's offensive. So let me give you another example. Very recently, this was just in February. So Erin Murphy, I believe, you know, she formally announced her run for clerk of Supreme Judicial Court of Suffolk County. She did that on Super Tuesday. But just last month, February, Maura Healey, so she's, you know, of course, you know, our governor, she nominated her ex-girlfriend to the state's highest court, and people were angry. And so again, I'm using these examples because people shouldn't walk away with this world. Well, this was about this city council, or this was about this person. No, this is ultimately about a phenomenon that's not doing us any favors. What's the point of getting an education? What's the point of working hard? What's the point of trying to work toward any goal when all one really has to do is just ingratiate himself or herself with the right people? I mean, people were really, really angry about Maura Healey nominating her ex-girlfriend to the state's highest court. And people might argue, well, she was qualified. You know what? Even if she did have the qualifications, it's the fact that it's the governor's ex-girlfriend. And so while it's not necessary, well, I mean, in some ways it is as egregious of an example as the one, the previous one that I've been detailing, because it's just because her relationship, you know, her relation, Maura Healey's relationship with her ex, what's it, Gabrielle Wolohosian. It's because of the intimate nature of their relationship, you know, they were romantic partners. It taints the appointment. You know, during, during the pandemic, you had our veterans that, you know, suffered. What do we have? I'm trying to pull up the headline now. What's it, Holyoke? Yeah, so... you had the soldiers who died, and it's you had the person who was running the home. The person didn't have the qualifications, and it may not seem like a big deal, but it is, and it becomes a big deal when a tragedy occurs. So what is my point and what is the takeaway? If we're going to put a person in a position, any position, the person has to have the qualifications and necessary experience, period. And if the person's making a decision you know, that can impact a lot of people, experience in bona fides becomes all the more important. And on that note, thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to hanging out with you next week.
The preceding commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio@bnnmedia.org.